may want to ask, make sure everybody's on the phone still.
Yeah.
Do a re-roll call.
Do we have the Director Record and Director Corona back on the call?
I'm on.
Is Director Record back on? He took 10 minutes seriously. Okay, we'll let him catch up. So let's start in with agenda item 6A, which is the financial operating and capital highlights through the fourth quarter of fiscal year 2019 and 2020. Laura.
Good morning, President Sullivan and members of the board. I'm happy to be here today to give you your fourth quarter financial and capital highlights report. I'll be starting off, and then I'll be turning it over to Joe Mawad for the capital highlights. We'll just go ahead and get started
All right, slight difficulty. I'm trying to get the feed over to the other individuals. Bear with me a moment.
Do I have control now?
Yes, you do.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, thank you. So these are our preliminary pre-audit numbers for fiscal year ending 2020. Our audit field work just finish up last week, and I'm unaware of any audit adjustments that were made to our financial numbers, so they should come in pretty close. There are adjustments that we make after this point, though. Overall, our consolidated revenues exceeded budget by 1.8%, but our expenses were lower by 6%. So water service came in lower, but our sewer service came in higher, and we'll go over all these details in specific slides. Our connection fees came in at $6,335 for the quarter, but we're about $800,000 under budget. Our total expenses were under budget by 3.7%. And the good news is, overall, our net operating margin exceeded budget by $27.2 million. And the thing to note about our net operating margin is that it provides for our capital improvements and our debt service payments. It's not moving, Lance.
Go ahead, Troy.
Okay, there we go. Perfect, thank you. So moving on to the individual services, our water service, the acre feet sold came in at 10.4 below budget, and revenue was 5.4 below budget, and this was really due to a wet winter we had this year. Domestic sales specifically came in $3 billion below budget. Acre feet sold was 10.4%, and probably the biggest was our agricultural water sales were below budget, and that, you know, just a wet winter this past year. But to offset it, we did have lower purchased water costs. Our water costs were lower than budget by $6.8 million. This is just a schedule in tabular form of what we just went over. The only thing that I would highlight on this schedule relates to the comparison to prior year. Our revenues increased over prior year, and that was mainly because we sold more acre feet than prior year by 8%, and also it reflects our rate increase that went into effect January 2020. A comparison, our purchase water was higher last year due to the increased sales. Conversely, we had positive results on our wastewater service because of the wet winter. Our treatment flows were up 2.3 MGD. Our wastewater revenue was up $5.7 million above budget. And we were also able to hold our operating expenses. They were $2.3 million or 3.5% below budget, resulting in a positive net operating revenue of $8 million above budget, which was very positive. Some of the operating costs that were reflective were our chemicals and sodium. They were a little bit off, lower than budget. It was hard to predict those since the plant was new this year. We had unplanned maintenance and repair for the Warm Springs lift station. I believe Jeff gave a report on that, about 300,000. And I mentioned last quarter about the electricity expense. We had solar credits reflected last year that are not included this year due to the way that Edison allocated those credits. Moving along to recycled water, the wet winter reflected recycled water similarly to our water service. We were 18.9% below budget and 13.1% above prior year. Our net operating revenue of $3.5 million to fund capital commitments was below budget about $500,000. As far as general administrative expenses, they were below budget by 11.4%, and a lot of that has to do with the change of environment for COVID. We really reduced our expenditures tremendously. PG&A, our outside service expenditures, were really reduced because we no longer could do all of our educational experiences, and also, obviously, none of the district has been able to travel, so we've reduced expenses there. In addition, we are above budget on our capital expenditures relating to computer equipment and furniture, and that just has to do with a new accounting policy that we implemented of how we capitalize that small equipment. And the biggest savings was due to the labor expense, which was below budget due to vacancies. We have 38 vacant positions at the end of June 2020. And also, there were delays in implementing our class and compensation study, so it deferred increased salaries for a few months. As it relates to our restricted and reserved cash trends, you'll notice the dip in September related to cash outflows that we have for CalPERS and debt service payments. But it has been increasing since then to this quarter, and the growth is mainly due to reimbursements from our bond funds. When we expend capital from our reserves, we then get reimbursed. Property taxes from the county, and then also we've been very successful in our grants, and some of those grant receipts offset some of our project costs, and we had those receipts through the end of the year. And sewer connection fees. We missed the budget by 14 EDUs. So that is pretty darn close, especially with what's happened in the last quarter. As you'll see, March through June, that's when the numbers started narrowing. You can see the narrowing effect. But I think overall, with how we ended the quarter, I think we did pretty well. This is a sheet that just reflects the largest growth in what areas. So Menifee, Romoland came in the highest with an additional 1,160 EDUs. Temecula had 957 additional EDUs this year. And Winchester, French Valley came in third with 519. So overall, when you combine all of our services, while revenues came in 1% less than planned, we kept our costs down by about 3.7%. So we ended up with a very strong net operating margin, which came in better than planned. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn it over to Joe Mawad, who will go over the capital improvement program, and then I'll be back to talk about operating fixed assets and close the report.
Thank you, Laura. We can pull up the presentation. Thank you. So, good morning again, Mr. President, members of the board. I wanted to provide you a review of last year's performance on our capital improvement program. As Laura mentioned, we had quite a year on the CIP front. It was an exceptional year in terms of execution. So on slide two, we are presenting the five-year CIP budget as shown here with a total of $466 million, of which we had identified $69 million of external funding. In fact, we're on track to exceed securing a higher amount of external funding towards our CIP, and I'll get into those specifics here shortly. As you can see here, the investments we plan over the next 5 years are broken down into the water product line, sewer shown in green, recycled in purple, and then general projects meaning such as solar initiative as well as the OMC laboratory renovation. This past year, in 2019-20, we had identified $91 million of investment in our CIP program. So for this past year, that $91 million constituted 156 projects. As shown here on slide 3, they distributed among the various product lines, 44% in water, 29% of the budget in sewer, 16% in recycled, and then the general projects, primarily consisting of the solar project and the OMC lab. As you would expect, the majority of the funds are allocated towards construction. 76% is allocated towards construction, whereas 21% for design, and then 3% remaining for planning effort. So how did we do? Slide 4 shows the quarterly progression and execution of our CIP. We completed the year with $102 million expended. We had previously identified $91 million, so we are above budget. Having said that, there's a couple of considerations. We have several multi-year construction projects, such as the Paris 2 desalter, the Mountain Avenue West replenishment basin, and often it is difficult to predict in any one particular year how much performance you're going to have on those large multi-year projects. The other consideration is that although we expended $102 million, we did receive $32 million in grant reimbursement this past year. So our out-of-pocket for the district was $70 million, which is on target to what we had identified. In fact, I think we were off by about $35,000. So quite exceptional in terms of bringing in the CIP right on target to what we had projected in terms of out-of-pocket expenditures. This past year, five projects in particular constituted the majority of the expenditures that we realized. The Paris 2 desalter at $26.3 million, the Mountain Avenue West, $8.2 million, Temecula Recycled Water Pipeline, $8 million, the solar project, and then the blower electrification project at our reclamation plant. So in total, these five projects alone contributed $57 million in execution. And as you can see here on slide 5, there's some pictures of our ongoing construction activities. The bottom left is the Paris 2 desalter. And we will be coming forward at the next O&E with a comprehensive update on the construction progress at Paris 2. On the top right is the solar pads grading effort that we completed this past year. And then at the bottom is the Mountain Avenue West replenishment basin, including some of the pipelines that we had to install. As Brian mentioned, that project is on track to complete construction by February of next year. So this past year, we completed 19 projects in terms of construction. They span quite a diverse list of projects and the value, from $100,000 doing a raw water pipeline over Well 65 all the way to $80 million in completing the Temecula Reclamation Plant expansion. Other projects of note is Quail Valley Subarea 9 Phase 1 at $7 million. And again, completing the pads for the solar phase 3 initiative at $8 million as well. In total, we completed $117 million worth of project this past year. So while we completed 19 construction projects, we also went out to bid on 19 additional projects, as shown here on slide 7. As you can see here, the low bids on each one of these projects, when you look at the aggregate, we came in approximately 14% below the engineer's estimate. That's where we want to be. We always want to be a little bit below the engineer's estimate. And what this also tells us is that there continues to be a healthy, competitive market for our construction projects. And we're very pleased with the bid results that we've been seeing. So I wanted to just really go through quickly some of our critical projects in support of our strategic priorities in terms of water supply and diversity and reliability. We're completing the design on the Cactus Feeder, Phase 1 in Moreno Valley. We anticipate going out to bid by the end of this calendar year. We're also working closely with Metropolitan Water District. They are finalizing the bid documents for the Paris Valley Pipeline I-215 crossing. Again, they are planning on going out to bid in the fall with a construction contract to be in place by early next year. By completing this final crossing of the I-215, we'll be able to gain access to more water supply from the Mills filtration plant. And then, as mentioned before, we are well on our way to completing the construction on the Mountain Avenue West replenishment basin. We're also working with Metropolitan on a new turnout, as well as a pipeline that will bring raw water into San Jacinto in support of our water banking initiative, and that project is in design. In terms of water recycling, we have substantially completed the construction of upgrades at our Reach 4 booster station. We are also completing the construction of our Temecula recycled water pipeline that will add additional capacity from the Temecula plant, which was recently expanded. And then we are also advancing our purified water replenishment program, our version of indirect potable reuse. We're working on the EIR. We also are working on the regulatory permits. This is another project where we're coming back to the next O&E with a comprehensive update on the various ongoing activities in support of our purified water replenishment program, including our public outreach efforts. In terms of salt management, you're familiar with the Parecida Salter. This is, in fact, the largest single construction contract that we currently have ongoing. And it's scheduled to be completed by mid next year. In terms of brine concentration, we completed the demonstration phase of the desaltech at the desalters. Now we've moved that equipment over the San Jacinto Reclamation Plant. And we just started the demonstration testing of the desaltech technology for recycled water, again, in support of our PWR program. And we continue our work with the Army Corps of Engineers. As you may recall, they provided us both in FY18 and FY19 funding. We're working on design of a brackish water transmission line. We've also applied for the last tranche of available funding under the previous WARDA. We have $4.7 million remaining. We've applied for that for the FY2021. In terms of protection of public and environmental health, as I mentioned earlier this morning, we are advancing the planning effort on the Quail Valley sewer sub-area 4. Defining what would be the most optimum sewering solution for that area, and then positioning the district to pursue construction dollars in support of extending the sewer further into Quail Valley. We're also working on Well 56, which, as you may recall, was removed from service due to elevated PFAS concentration. We are advancing the engineering that is needed, as well as the property acquisition for wellhead treatment at that facility. We're also finalizing the construction of the Well 59 treatment. Again, that well experienced elevated concentration of PFAS. We have several agreements with the Air Force to fund the ongoing design and construction effort. The construction effort, which includes installation of a granular activated carbon, that's scheduled to be completed by the end of this year. The well should be back in operation next year. And then, of course, you're familiar with our North Paris groundwater contamination remediation project, $90 million. 50% of that, $45 million, is being funded by the State Water Resource Control Board. We have multiple activities ongoing to advance that project. Per the grant requirements, the program facilities need to be constructed and completed by early 2023. In terms of sound planning and appropriate investment, our Southern Wine Country infrastructure phasing that we recently presented the study findings on, so we've completed that effort. The solar phase 3, we've completed the solar pads and we're well on our way to installing the solar arrays. And then we're also conducting a planning effort to look at additional water supply from the Skinner filtration plant, working with Metropolitan on potentially acquiring easements that they have for our proposed transmission system. So all in all, it's been an incredible year, a significant amount of projects that were completed. I wanted to just highlight some of our accomplishments on the North Paris Groundwater Program. It was an incredible team effort to secure $45 million in Prop 1 funding from the state. We also completed the construction of the Temecula Reclamation Plant construction. We are well on our way on the Paris 2 construction. We're about 60% completed. We were also able to secure State Water Resource Control Board funding in the amount of $22.5 million. In addition, we entered into an LRP agreement with Metropolitan. And then our Groundwater Reliability Plus program, Brian Powell described the SARCUP program, but part of that is construction of the Mountain Avenue Replenishment Basin. Very pleased with how that project is moving along. We also completed the refurbishment and upgrade of our OMC labs. I believe that the board had a chance to tour those facilities. And then we are advancing our planning effort on the Quail Valley Sub-Area 4. And of course, we continue to look at expansion of our recycled water system through our accelerated retrofit program. So in terms of next year, we're looking at $118 million worth of investment in the various product lines as shown here on slide 14. Again, a significant amount in the water product line, a total of 171 projects that we are anticipating to advance next year, or basically this current year. So a lot of work ahead of us, and I want to mention that it's been a great team effort. This is obviously not only engineering and construction, it's O&M, it's finance, it's regulatory compliance, it's across the entire district. Everyone is supporting implementation of this program, and we appreciate all the effort by all the staff. And with that, I also wanted to mention that you should have in front of you a booklet that provides you with a detailed breakdown of each of our active CIP projects per division. Let us know if you have any questions on any of that information. And before I turn it back over to Laura, any questions on our CIP program?
I have none. Thank you.
Great job.
Thank you.
Yes. A lot of work.
So this schedule summarizes what Joe just outlined. I think to note the two red circles are just the great work that was done. While they came in over budget by 12%, it's accounted for through grants. And the stellar performance at coming 100% on target, which is unheard of. I have never seen that. So good work to all the departments that are involved in the capital program. Oops, I went too far, Lance. Can you go back one? And as it relates to OFA, the year-end numbers, I'll just highlight a couple items. On the vehicle side, and I think I've mentioned this in previous reports, it just takes a long lag time to prepare for getting vehicles and getting them customized. So everything that was planned was ordered except for a couple vehicles that we did hold back because of COVID that we just didn't feel were necessary during this time and were deferred. And as it relates to IT infrastructure, they try and do their best in timing large multi-year projects, so like the CIS project or some of the SCADA projects. And sometimes the work rolls over into the second year of the budget, but we're on track with those projects and we're happy with where the OFA numbers came in. So lastly, just in conclusion, generally we ended the year very well, all things considered and everything that we've been through in 2020. As I mentioned, our total operating revenue, while it came in at 1% below target, we held our expenditures, which came in better than planned, by 3.7%. The revenue targets were below target, mainly due to the wet winter, and our consolidated net margin came in very strong, at $84 million above budget by $27 million. Connection fee revenue, while it came in lower than planned, we hit the budget pretty closely, and we're very happy that development is continuing. And the last star of the show was our CIP that came in at 100% target of completion. So with that, we're here to answer any questions that you might have on our fourth quarter report.
I don't have any. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
So, President Sullivan, I have a question.
Yes. Director Record.
Joe, you mentioned what a great year it was and what a great team effort it was, and you mentioned every department at Eastern except the board. So is the board kind of holding us back on this? Or?
Director Record, we couldn't do any of it without the board. So that goes without saying. The board support is key to all this.
If you were here, Director Record, you'd see how red Joe's face is right now.
No, I mean, you're right. What a great year. And the finance part of it and all that, it's just, it's really great. My compliments to staff. Well done.
Thank you.
Yes, we all echo that. Thank you, Director Record. With that, let's go to 6B, which is the San Jacinto Wildlife Area Land Management Plan. And our lady with the designer boot.
Yes, I know you are all very jealous. I can give you the contact information after the meeting. Good morning, President Sullivan and members of the board. I am happy to be here this morning to provide you with the long-anticipated update on the San Jacinto Wildlife Area Land Use Management Plan. EMWD and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife have a long history of collaboration on the use of recycled water in the San Jacinto wildlife area. So this morning, I'm going to give you a little bit of background on the San Jacinto Wildlife Area, in addition to summarizing some of the key terms from the original 1987 agreement for recycled water use in the area and subsequent amendments. I'll also provide you with an overview of the recycled water use in the area, as well as some of the key findings from the land use plan and the associated CEQA documentation. The San Jacinto Wildlife Area is approximately 19,000 acres, and it includes 900 acres of restored wetlands. And it's actually the first state wildlife area that utilizes recycled water. And it's also, the area was also established partially in response to mitigation measures required with the State Water Project loss of wildlife area. In 1987, EMWD and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife entered into a reclaimed water supply project agreement. And this established the terms for construction and operation of a reclaimed water conveyance system that was really established to provide a water source for the wildlife habitat on the San Jacinto Wildlife Area and areas adjacent to the pipeline. The agreement established the commitments associated with providing water for the area for a term of 25 years. And it included the infrastructure investments, including joint financing of a pipeline facility, as well as a term in which the California Department of Fish and Wildlife funded just about 38% of the infrastructure, and in exchange received a reduced rate for an agreed upon amount of recycled water. And the agreement established an intent of a long-term commitment that providing water for the San Jacinto Wildlife Area is a long-term mutually beneficial program for both the state and EMWD. This original agreement, again, that was established in 1987, was based on providing secondary treated recycled water. It also established a range starting with about 1,500 acre-feet per fiscal year based on the availability of recycled water at the initiation of the agreement to 4,500 acre-feet per year that is the current maximum allowed by the agreement. The cost of the recycled water, as I mentioned, was established based on the investment at the time for about that 38% of the pipeline. So the reduced rate of the recycled water was initially at $10 per acre foot. Again, this is for secondary treated recycled water. And then on top of that, the chlorination added another $10 per acre foot. This was adjusted every fiscal year based on the CPI. And so our 2020 rate was $63.02, and in 2021 we'll go up to $67.44. The graphic here shows the pipeline that conveys the recycled water from the San Jacinto plant into the wildlife area, and it's approximately 53,000 linear feet of pipeline, again, that the California Department of Fish and Wildlife helped fund initially. This next graphic shows the historical recycled water use since about 1992, and you can see it growing over time with the max available of 4,500 acre-feet per fiscal year. And over the past about 7 years, they've been consistently using about 3,500 acre-feet per year, with the exception of fiscal year 2017-2018, where they got close to their 4,500 acre-feet allotment. But again, they've been pretty consistent over the last 7 years in that 3,500 acre-feet range. This next graphic shows their monthly water use. There were some original terms with respect to seasonal water use. Here, though, what you can see is typically, the September month is where they take most of the recycled water with some additional use in other summer months. But again, September seems to be their biggest month. The next graphic, Jeff presented this a few months ago in his recycled water update. But again, just a reminder that the San Jacinto Wildlife Area recycled water use makes up between 12 and 15% of our overall recycled water use in our service area. This original agreement, again, had a term of 25 years, and it expired on June 30th, 2014. However, a variety of time extensions were executed to allow the California Department of Fish and Wildlife to complete its long-term land management plan, which, again, as I mentioned when I started the presentation, has been complete, and then also the supporting CEQA documentation. So starting in 2014, the board authorized sequential one-year extensions through 2017. And in 2018, the board authorized an additional one-year extension, as well as up to two additional one-year extensions that would allow the agreement to be extended through June 30th, 2021. And that is amendment number 7, and that is set to expire on June 30th, 2021. This aligns well with the completion of the land management plan and the CEQA process, which the final documents are complete and they have been noticed and posted. And so California Department of Fish and Wildlife expect the process to be completed this year. With respect to water demands and supply, the land management plan defines 300 acres of new waterfowl ponds and water management infrastructure. As I mentioned, over the past about 7 years, their existing management activities have required about 3,500 acre feet per year of recycled water. They acknowledge that in the plan as being a drought year use. The new 300 acres of pond would require an additional 2,000 acre feet per year of recycled water. The plan also establishes three different water supply alternatives, one being a recycled water storage project, a rehabbing an existing well that exists in the vicinity, as well as a potential pump back system to reuse water after the waterfowl season. The plan also describes tasks and goals associated with water supply. They acknowledge that they would like to maintain their ability to use recycled water at a reasonable cost to support the existing and future wetlands habitat. They need to renew an agreement with EMWD for recycled water. They've acknowledged the potential need to develop a water storage program. And they highlight, I actually formatted the text similar to how they formatted the text in the land management plan with respect to their goal to seek to keep the existing water allocation of 4,500 acre feet per year. And this, I think, was highlighted because they got a lot of questions about the amount of water that they would be seeking to maintain in future agreements. So they really wanted to reinforce their commitment to maintaining that maximum of 4,500 acre feet per year. And they also communicated their intent to maintain a priority one category designation. They also developed a programmatic environmental impact report as part of their CEQA documentation to support the land management plan. The document assesses potential effects on the environment resulting from the implementation of the proposed plan. And it included looking at both newly proposed activities and existing activities that could be being expanded. In addition to the land management plan, they did look at several alternatives, one including a no recycled water storage facility. As I mentioned, they did get several comments on both the programmatic EIR and the land management plan. They established a 60-day public review period that started at the end of 2017 and completed in February of 2018. They received comments from 18 parties, including agencies, businesses, NGOs, and individuals. EMWD also provided comments on the plan. And a couple of the comments that were directly related to water supply and their responses included questioning the need for the recycled water storage, again, in the context of the long-term relationship between Eastern and providing the recycled water. They responded that it's an option that if they determine it's needed in the future to support the expanded activities, that they will further define the project at that time, that the exact location and design details are yet to be determined, and the potential impacts from that element of the project would also need to be further analyzed before a water storage project was implemented. They also received several comments regarding the recycled water agreement with Eastern. And the response from California Department of Fish and Wildlife was that they will continue the relationship with EMWD and continue to use the recycled water for implementation of their land management plan activities. They assumed an ongoing relationship with EMWD and anticipated that new long-term contract terms will not be materially different. This is in their words from their responses to the comments. And if the LMP is approved, that CDFW and EMWD will enter a long-term contract with similar conditions. We have continued to coordinate with CDFW, obviously every year as the amendment is has been, the agreement has been extended, but also over the past several months, we have engaged in discussions with them regarding updated terms and conditions that are more contemporary with our actual cost of service for providing that recycled water. You know, especially these early conditions were based on secondary. Now we're at tertiary. We obviously are providing a much higher quality of water, which is in the best interests of both parties. So our goal is to come to agreement with those new terms and conditions and present a new agreement to the board in before the current amendment expires in June 30, 2021. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Do you have any questions of Linnea?
No, just say excellent work. I know that this has been an item before this board for several years, and I know there are several outside groups that I think would like us to provide more water. So it's interesting that Fish and Wildlife came back with the exact same amount of water we've been providing, and we're happy to do that. And so good work so far. I look forward to final agreement with them.
Yeah, I think it's good. The three alternatives for water that they had, what was the third one, the pump back, or what was
that? It was something that they mentioned in their land management plan. So they don't go into details. They literally just reference it that it's an opportunity for them. I'm assuming that seasonally that they would have a way to, in essence, recirculate it. It almost seems like you'd need some sort of storage to supplement that, but again, they didn't detail exactly how that would work.
Okay, I just wondered. It didn't make sense to me. I couldn't put my mind around it. I don't have any other questions.
Okay, hearing none. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. With that, let's go to agenda item 7, which is a receive and file, accept a motion and a second for approval of item 7A and 7B.
I'll move the item.
Move the item.
Randy second.
The move by Director Record, seconded by Director Pauley. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan.
Aye.
Director Pauley.
Aye.
Director Slauson.
Aye.
Director Corona.
Aye.
Director Record.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Let's go to agenda item 8, which is the calendar review. Nicole.
Good morning, President Sullivan, members of the board. I have three new events for your consideration, and flyers for each event are attached beginning on page 5. On October 8th, which is a Thursday at 6 p.m., the Rivers and Lands Conservancy annual event will be held. It will be virtual. The district is a sponsor. There are 10 seats available, well, virtual seats, if anyone's interested in participating.
When is it?
Thursday, October 8th, in the evening. It's a 6 p.m. to 7 p.m.
Yeah, I may do that.
Okay. Thank you, Director Sullivan.
Put me down, too.
The flood control folks that are...
Thank you both. The next event is SAPA and the Local Government Commission will be jointly hosting a virtual summit. The first one will be on regional water planning. The dates are October 8th, October 13th, and October 14th. And each session will run from 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. The flyer shows details for the event. The first day will be opened by California Natural Resources Agency Secretary Wade Crowfoot, and that agenda is also attached as page 7. The final event for your consideration is October 16th, which is a Friday. The CalDESAL will be holding a virtual town hall event with Nancy Vogel, and that will be from 3 to 4:30 p.m. I have Directors Sullivan and Polly, if anyone else would like to participate. And information for that event is attached as page 8 of this review. Moving to page 2, we have the board's master calendar for the next 3 weeks. September 17th at 7:30 a.m., Director Sullivan and General Manager Jones will be participating in virtual legislative meetings. And at 7:45 a.m., the Murrieta Student of the Month event will be held, which is on Director Polly's calendar. Tomorrow at 3:30 p.m., the joint committee meeting with Western Municipal Water District is scheduled for Directors Slauson and Sullivan. And on Monday, September 21st, the Board Executive Committee will meet at 7:30 a.m., and that's Directors Slauson and Sullivan. On Monday, the 21st, at 11 a.m., the CalDESAL Executive Committee teleconference is on Director Polly's calendar. On Tuesday, September 22nd, the Metropolitan Water District Committee meetings for Director Record's calendar. On Wednesday, September 23rd, beginning at 7:30 a.m., day 2 of the virtual Washington, D.C. legislative meetings is on Director Sullivan's calendar. And for Director Slauson's calendar, the Aqua Educational Workshop on Financial Conflicts of Interest, that's at 10 a.m. And on Thursday, September 24th, at 3:30 p.m., the Board Operations and Engineering Committee meeting will be held, and that's Directors Slauson and Sullivan. On Wednesday, September 30th at 10 a.m., another Aqua Educational Workshop for Director Slauson's calendar. That's the last in this series. Thursday, October 1st, the Board Administrative Committee will meet at 4 p.m., Directors Polly and Sullivan. On Monday, October 5th, Director Polly has an update meeting with the Deputy General Manager, Laura Nomura, at 7:30 a.m. at the district. On Monday, October 5th, the WRCOG Executive Committee will meet at 2 p.m., Director Sullivan. And on Tuesday, October 6th, the SOPA Commission will meet at 9:30 a.m. It's a virtual meeting. And on the 6th at 2 p.m., the ad hoc meeting with Rancho California Water District will be held. That's Directors Corona and Record. On page 3 of your report, we have upcoming special events, board meetings, and committee meetings. And on page 4, we have the upcoming joint committee meetings and holiday schedule. Are there any additions to the calendar or questions? Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, with that, let's go to the individual directors' reports. Director Corona.
Okay. We had the Elsinore Valley Eastern Interagency meeting, and that was a good meeting. On the Rancho California Water District meeting, the interesting topic was a potential wheeling agreement in the Murrieta area there between Western and Rancho. A specific piece of property had been trying to get water, I think now for about 7 years, and because of what's going on down there in Murrieta, it hasn't been happening. So Rancho approved a tentative wheeling agreement with Western, Western is now, the ball's in their court, and they're waiting for Western to approve that wheeling agreement. So that's my report.
Okay. Director Polly.
Yes, we had a meeting with Joe and Paul, and I think Ron was able to sit in on part of it about Winchester planning. A lot of things are looking like they're starting to develop and take place in the Winchester area. In fact, if you drive through it today, there's construction going on. By the way, as a good overview of the long-term strategic planning, one infrastructure we're going to have to probably put in there in the next 5 years or so, including a lift station and some other lines and things. So anyway, I really appreciated, Joe, the update on that to keep me in the loop. And two, that Joe has reached out to a lot of the large landowners there and gotten their input on what needs to go in. So just a kudos to that. EMWD Elsinore meeting, always a good meeting. I think we kind of provide those guys with a lot of information of what's going on, especially at MET and in just in general. And so Paul always does a fantastic job with providing information to that district and hopefully getting a little information from them sometimes. Had the bi-monthly meeting with the general manager, a good update on things going on here in the district. And then finally, the CalDESAL strategic planning meeting where we kind of laid out things happening at CalDESAL over the next year. I just want to note that the new executive director of CalDESAL, Wendy Ritterbush, who's been there for about a year now, I think, in my opinion, is really doing a fantastic job of kind of making that organization go forward and getting more involved. I think her background with Aqua and what goes on in Sacramento is really being a plus there. So one of the topics is figuring out new members, et cetera, so we can get probably a full-time lobbyist on for CalDESAL. So one of the main things that came out of their strategic planning meeting. That is my update.
Terrific. Okay, Director Record.
So joint Inland and Orange County Caucus meeting review of the MET agenda, usually very good, and this one was too. Standing committee and board meetings, you have a very thorough update that Jolene worked very hard to present. I think the biggest item on the agenda for this month was a review of COVID impacts and whether or not we adjusted our 3% rate increase. Pretty good discussion. There was a substitute motion made by the director from Fullerton to direct staff to not bring anything to the board that's not in the budget unless it's an emergency, and also to take a look at groundwater replenishment programs to try to generate some income. The director asked legal counsel if it was legal to restrict the board on future actions, and the legal counsel said, no, boards can do whatever they want to. So it was just sort of a symbolic gesture to, I think, let the public know that we're not going to do anything extraordinary, but certainly if anything happens, we'll still be doing our job. And then under EMWD, update with the general manager, good meeting. A lot going on. Thank you.
Hey, Director Slauson.
Yes, I attended the Aqua presentation, legal education workshops. The first one was on the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, SGMA, and they discussed the regulations, the requirements around that act, as well as effects on water quality. I attended the update with the general manager, Mr. Jones, and of course I updated on numerous issues facing the district, and attended SOPA yesterday. And among other things, we received informational reports on Prop 84 and Prop 1 status and the disadvantaged community involvement program status and an update on claim for damages. The claimant is Larry McKinney.
Okay.
That's it.
All right. With that, I did attend the Paris and Menifee Student of the Month recognition on the virtual event, which EMWD is always a participant, and also a lot of thanks to Amanda for keeping us in that one. I did attend the NWRA Water Table Series on the 10th. They had some pretty good speakers. I did attend the NWRA Federal Affairs Committee on the 11th, just to keep us abreast of what some of the Western states are doing. It seems to be a lot of activity in Washington and Oregon, and some of the legal stuff that's going on with Waters of the U.S. I did attend the No, I did not attend the water reuse virtual symposium. I didn't get a chance to do that one. I did attend the Western Riverside Council of Governments Executive Committee on the 14th. Paul and Tim Barr did an excellent job talking about PFAS and PFOS, and so that was interesting. And an update with the general manager on the 15th, which is always an illuminating hour or hour and a half, so appreciate that. Okay. With that, do we have any other directors' comments or future agenda items? Hearing none. Council, do we have reason for a closed session today?
We do not, Mr. Chair.
With that, then we'll adjourn the meeting to the regular meeting on Wednesday, October the 7th, at 2020, at 9 a.m. Thank you for the attendance today.
Thank you, directors.
So long, everyone.
So long.